Welcome to the June 28, 2017 edition of The Numbers Game. I'm your host, Nick Giffen. You can follow me on Twitter at RotoDoc. And with me, as always, Josh Hermsmeyer. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at FriscoJosh. We've got an awesome show coming up today. We have Scott Barrett of Pro Football Focus. He's going to be talking about wide receiver efficiency, depth-adjusted wide receiver efficiency, QB-adjusted wide receiver efficiency. It's going to be awesome. It's stuff that both Scott and I have been working on independently, and so we'll kind of put our heads together. Josh will be able to chime in around stickiness and air yards. It's going to be a lot of fun, so I'm really excited to talk with Scott about this. What do you think, Josh? You excited?
Oh, totally excited. I mean, this is going to be a tremendous conversation. Scott has got access to just a wealth of data over there at PFF. Can't wait to pick his brain.
Me either. It's going to be certainly a fun episode, and we're going to get to the Scott Barrett portion of the show in the second half of the show. Of course, Josh and I, we still have our host segment to do. We still have some things to talk about, and we're going to talk about an article that our own Anthony Amico wrote. It's going to be finding some bargains using our RotoViz screener. So we'll talk about a little bit about the methodology, and then we'll dive into those comparisons, and Josh and I will play a little bit of agree or disagree on those bargains. And we're going to do that, of course, right after I remind you all that you can get a listener's only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our premium NFL content, and it also supports the pod. You can also support the pod by subscribing to and rating the RotoViz radio channel on iTunes. Do that and you'll be eligible to compete against some RotoViz podcasters and writers in the $35 entry best ball league hosted by our friends at the FFPC. The winner of each league will receive a year-long RotoViz pass on top of the cash prize, so go to iTunes, leave a review with your name in it, and then email us at rotovizradio@gmail.com to let us know you want to be in the RotoViz league, and we'll definitely get that set up. Also, we have one listener spot to give away for the Scott Fishbowl this year. I know it's a big contest, 720 entrants, and RotoViz has one fan spot to give away. So when you do review us, make sure you email us that you reviewed us along with your Disney-themed team name, and we will get you entered in a drawing for that one fan spot. So make sure to do that as well. Email us, rotovizradio@gmail.com for that. Alrighty, so let's talk about Anthony's article here. I thought it was an interesting article, a great use of our RotoViz screener. For those of you who haven't used the RotoViz screener, I wanted to plug it here first a little bit. It is the ultimate search tool for fantasy football stats. You can look up things like fantasy points over expectation. You can do that per attempt. You can look per game, per season, all sorts of different filters. Filter for red zone, filter for rookies, filter for ages, all sorts of different things you can look at here. It's just such a great tool. And one of the tabs on our RotoViz screener is actually, on the RotoViz screener is actually a tab called the similarity search. And what you can do there is, based off of the years you choose or whatever, you can compare certain players to other players based off of similar statistics. So, like, for example, you can take five or six different statistics. So for a quarterback, it might be passing attempts, might be AYA, touchdown rate, interception rate, and maybe a rushing stat or something like that. And you throw in those numbers, and you can find another closest comparable player to that player with those statistics. So great use of similarity scores there. And that's what Anthony Amico did in this article. So we've got eight bargains here that Anthony's found based off similarity scores. So we're going to go through those real quick. Like I said, Josh and I, it's going to be rapid fire style. I'm gonna toss out the names and their ADPs. And then Josh and I will either say agree or disagree and give one quick reason. So the first comparison here, Josh, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
The first comparison here, Jameis Winston, who is currently QB6, Andy Dalton at QB16. So Andy Dalton is the bargain version of Jameis Winston. Agree or disagree?
Agree. Late round QB is alive and well. Their AYA is almost identical. Their pass attempts are almost identical. I think Anthony has really stumbled upon, well, not stumbled upon. He has given a perfect example of why late round QB is what it is.
I also 100% agree. If you look at Andy Dalton, couple of things have actually bitten him in the past few years in terms of his overall finish, either his injuries or injuries to AJ Green or Eifert, things like that. So these stats also have a lot of those injuries built into them. I certainly think he's the bargain Jameis Winston. He might even be a little bit better than Winston. So I'm going to agree there. What do you got next, Josh?
Next up is a bargain player being Blake Bortles at QB21, being a bargain version of Andrew Luck QB3. What do you think?
I'm going to go with kind of indifferent, and I know it's not agree or disagree, but I'm going to go indifferent here because I think there are some similarities and I think there's some differences. So I do think Blake Bortles is probably underrated at QB21 if you average his last 2 years, where he had just an insane amount of comeback volume 2 years ago, and then last year's really poor efficiency year. It's a little bit better than relative to his QB21 ADP. That said, he's certainly no Andrew Luck. Some of the numbers are similar, but certainly he is just a less efficient version of Andrew Luck at best. So that's why I'm going to go with the maybe there.
Yeah, I'm just going to disagree. And the reason being that Andrew Luck is a full AYA ahead, a full yard ahead of Blake Bortles, 7-6. And that's a big difference. It's the difference between being actually, a little above league average to being below league average. So there's that. Then there's their situations. Then there's the fact that I agree with you 100% that Blake Bortles at QB21 is undervalued. Even last year when he was terrible, he ended up being QB7 because he's garbage Bortles. So definitely better than QB21, but he is not Andrew Luck.
I love it. So next one we've got here, it is Todd Gurley at RB10. And then the bargain version of Todd Gurley is Doug Martin at RB31. What do you think?
I agree. I think Doug Martin is not getting enough respect. He is missing the first couple games. Todd Gurley is getting probably too much respect. None of the Evan Silva has pointed out he just has not been good for over a year. There was an article that came out recently that basically went into why he was bad. He wasn't making the right reads off his blocks. He wasn't doing a lot of the do you expect a guy with the quote-unquote talent of Todd Gurley would do? So I totally agree with Doug Martin as arbitrage Todd Gurley.
I thought you were going to say my article about Todd Gurley. No. I actually,
you enough.
Yeah, I actually really agree with this one as well. And there's one little caveat. I think definitely Doug Martin has more competition than Gurley. But in terms of the player, very similar stats, yards per target in terms of receiving numbers, 6.1 to 5.8, about three targets per game each. Their touchdown rates is really the only thing that's in Todd Gurley's favor, but I think some of that could come from the fact that the Tampa Bay likes to throw a lot, and Doug Martin's used more in the middle of the field, and certainly Gurley's a goal line back. But other than that touchdown rate, they have very similar stats, and both would probably be the lead back on their teams, and Gurley doesn't stand head and shoulders above Doug Martin. So I'm going to agree here. Caveat, of course, he misses three games and has more competition.
So here's an interesting one, and I think it's really intriguing. We got Rob Kelly at running back 44 as the bargain version of Carlos Hyde at running back 17. What do you think?
No, just no. For me, it's really about range of outcomes here. Carlos Hyde has an RB1 range of outcomes, obviously being the incumbent, the starter there, the lock starter, at least for now. He certainly could play, he hasn't yet, but he could play 16 games, whereas Rob Kelly, for me, could potentially be the backup. So his, I think his 16-game range of outcomes is certainly capped. So that said, in terms of player, if they do play on a per-week basis, if they're both the starter, I think very similar. But I think in terms of season-long, I'm going to disagree.
I'm going to disagree as well, and I think for me, it's something I said to Anthony when I was on their program this past week. You should check it out. We had a great time doing Shit or No Shit. But I think that, when it comes to running backs on Washington, I think that Gruden, the way he looks at running is that it's this necessary evil. He hates it. So the only thing he wants is that running back to not fumble. And that's why Rob Kelly took over for Matt Jones. Jones fumbled three times early in the season, so he was gone. Perrine's got these huge guns, these huge arms, right? So he's not going to fumble, right? I mean, he's this big dude. He's not going to fumble. I think coach is totally indifferent to who's back there, just as long as they don't screw it up. So his job is not safe. I think Carlos Hyde is, no matter what people are saying right now about these rookies. I'm definitely disagreeing.
All right, I've got an interesting one here, and I think this is interesting. Dez Bryant, wide receiver 10, the bargain version of Dez Bryant, Eric Decker at wide receiver 43.
I'm agreeing, and the reason why I'm agreeing is because of their TD rate. That's the thing that drives both their value. Neither of them have been hugely targeted in their career. 7.3 to 8 targets per game between the two of them. But what separates them from the pack is that TD rate, and it's elite. It's over 8%, 8.2% for Decker and 8.6% for Dez. So, to the extent that you can project that TD rate out another year, that's definitely an arbitrage play. I just think, you know, the big questions with Decker is going to be his health.
I 100% agree. I think this is possibly the best comparison here on the whole list for me. You mentioned that TD rate. That's what sticks out to me, that career TD rate for these guys. This is a 2010 to 2016 comparison. So these guys have sustained this career TD rate over a seven-year sample size. Very similar in terms of depth of target, receiving yards per target. Not necessarily depth. It doesn't have it on here. But very similar in yards per target, catch rate, so you have to assume their depth is also pretty similar, touchdown rate, everything is similar. You're really only getting a bargain on Decker relative to Dez because of the situation. And I think, you know, if Eric Decker outperforms the situation, you know, which is this muddled thing that we talked about last week on the numbers game, he's going to be a great buy. So I was kind of indifferent on him last week. I thought his ADP might be a slight bit low and not too much more low, but this kind of is pretty eye-opening. So I think Eric Decker is definitely a buy for me.
So here's one that's a little more middle of the road. It's just around a round difference between the two of them. So we got Kelvin Benjamin at wide receiver 36 is the bargain version of Allen Robinson at wide receiver 14. What's your take?
I'm going to agree, actually. I think this is a little bit interesting because you look at their TD rates, yards per target, catch rate numbers. I mean, almost essentially identical. They're both the wide receiver one on their team. They both get pretty decent red zone usage. The difference is in volume. You know, I don't know how much volume Kelvin Benjamin is going to see relative to Allen Robinson, but as we'll talk about with Scott Barrett in a little bit, you know, there could be some cause for concern with Allen Robinson in terms of volume decrease if efficiency really does correlate with volume decrease, or I should say inefficiency correlates with volume decrease. So I'm gonna agree, but it's not a huge difference in ADP, wide receiver 14 versus wide receiver 36. I think Benjamin's fairly priced. What I think Allen Robinson is overpriced.
I agree with you. And I disagree with Amico just because of what you said there at the end. I think that the difference between the two isn't enough. Allen Robinson is going probably too high right now. In fact, I think he's going far too high. I think, you know, at the highest, he should be about wide receiver 20. And I think he's a low-end wide receiver 2 this year. Whereas Kelvin Benjamin, he's probably a mid-round, wide receiver 3, low-end wide receiver 3. And again, for all the reasons you said, but I think Allen Robinson is going to be better just simply because the ceiling's higher, because of that volume, and he's going to continue to get it.
All right, two laps to go. Here we go. The next one, Doug Baldwin, wide receiver 12. The bargain is Randall Cobb at wide receiver 39. What do you get?
I'm buying this one. This is actually pretty good. Randall Cobb's been injured these past couple years. I really think he can come back around and be an old version of himself. He's got one of the best QBs in the league do that with, and what I would expect to see if Randall Cobb has a year like we would expect for him, or we hope for him, if he's going to outperform, is that TD rate, right? Because that's where that's where Aaron Rodgers is elite, is in making his receivers super, super efficient in the end zone and in the red zone. So if we see that TD rate come up, or at least be at his historical norms of 6.7%, 7%. He will definitely return value on a wide receiver 39 ADP, whereas you're having to pay a premium price right now for Doug Baldwin at wide receiver 12.
Interesting. That's certainly an interesting take, because I'm going to go the opposite way with Cobb here. So for me, Randall Cobb, just not efficient enough relative to Doug Baldwin. You of course, have, you know, you've got two great quarterbacks here, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, who, you know, both are exceptional quarterbacks. But when you QB adjust and when you depth adjust, Randall Cobb stands nowhere near Doug Baldwin in terms of efficiency. So I'm going to go with disagree, just simply based off the fact that Doug Baldwin, over a long period of time, has been a more efficient wide receiver than Randall Cobb.
All right, and then we're going to end this thing with some tight end talk. We got Charles Clay at tight end 27 being the bargain version of Martellus Bennett at tight end 11. What do you think?
You know, I'm going to agree just based off of who they are and what they've done in their careers. Certainly, you know, the stats bear it out, about a 0.05, so 5% TD rate for each, 7 yards per target, 67% catch rate, and about 4.8 targets per game each. So I'm going to agree with that. The thing, of course, is the situations are different. So Martellus Bennett has Aaron Rodgers thrown to him, the clear tight end on that roster, and then Charles Clay. He's down there at tight end 27. I think that's a discount because of his knees. So the thing that scares me here is his knees and just his rapport with Tyrod Taylor. I'm not so sure the connection will be there. Not that Martellus Bennett and Aaron Rodgers have developed a rapport because they never played together, but I think just Aaron Rodgers is a far better quarterback. So I could see Martellus Bennett's numbers being in line with his numbers last year when he had Tom Brady throwing to him in terms of efficiency. Charles Clay, I think he kind of is what he is, but I do like his ADP because of the knees.
Yeah, I'm going to agree too. This is a big enough gap in ADP where, you know, Amico makes a great point here. These guys, their efficiency stats and their targets per game are almost identical. So why not? Why not go with the cheaper guy? I don't think there's anything particularly sexy about Charles Clay. And I'm actually not the biggest Martellus Bennett fan. So, you know, if I'm indifferent here, I'll take the cheaper guy.
I love it. Well, that was certainly a rapid fire. Do you have any other names or guys or bargains you found? I mean, who do we think is the, you know, Kenny Britt? I think he's like the bargain version of what somebody out there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the air yards model like Britt in L.A. more than even prior last year. I don't think he's taken a step back in situation. So him going at wide receiver 40-something is absolutely insane to me. I think he was always a good talent coming out. We always had high hopes for him. And he finally, these past couple seasons, put some good stuff out there, some good tape out there, as they say, and with some really bad QB play. So I don't know why people are fading him so hard.
I'm going to figure out who's the bargain version of. That's going to be my goal by the time we get this episode aired, and I will have it in the write-up. But that's going to do it for our host segment here. Make sure you tune in after the break. We've got Scott Barrett of Pro Football Focus coming up to talk all about wide receiver efficiency, literally everything you ever want to know about wide receiver efficiency. We're going to do that after a quick word from our sponsor.
Hey, RotoViz fans. I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our friends at the Fantasy Football Players Championship, who are celebrating their 10th year as the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. Over the last few years, the FFPC has become the go-to destination for serious dynasty players. They now have over 140 active dynasty leagues, and here's something incredible. Not a single dynasty league has folded in 7 years. New startup dynasty leagues are forming now, with entry fees starting at $77 and going all the way up to $1,250 per team. The FFPC has leagues of all types drafting daily, including best ball leagues. These popular FFPC Draft Experts leagues start at just a $35 entry fee, and you can win cash prizes or satellite entries into next year's national contests, such as the FFPC Main Event, the world's biggest contest in season-long fantasy football. You can draft your main event team live in person at the Planet Hollywood Hotel and Casino Las Vegas or online from the comfort of your own home. Over 1,300 teams will compete for the massive $250,000 grand prize with over $1.7 million in total cash prizes in this year's contest. Don't miss the FFPC experience. Go to myffpc.com and register now. That's myffpc.com. Join your fellow players today at the FFPC, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football.
Please welcome to the show, Scott Barrett. Scott is a senior fantasy football analyst at Pro Football Focus. He also is the inventor of a bunch of different awesome metrics, dank stats, actual opportunity, and of course some of the metrics we'll be talking about today, depth-adjusted yards per target over expectation. That's another metric that I've actually called it the same thing myself without even knowing you called it. So I think that's going to be fun to discuss. It's going to be a great talk today. Scott, first of all, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm a little nervous just because I know you guys are both like two of, in my opinion, the best football data guys out there. And I'm worried I'm going to get exposed as a guy who's just not really on your level because I'm still out here doing the lookups and stuff instead of index match. I definitely have a long way to go. But yeah, really admire both you guys' work. Really excited to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, we admire your work ethic and all of the insights that you come up with. You know, definitely follow Scott Barrett on Twitter, @ScottBarrettDFB. He of the former Dude Fantasy Bro. So make sure you follow him on Twitter. He's tweeting out things all the time. And we're going to jump right into wide receiver efficiency. You actually just came out with a series of three articles about a week or two ago, 2 weeks ago at this point. And the first one was just talking about how important wide receiver stats are, wide receiver efficiency stats are for fantasy. And then the second part was talking about depth-adjusted efficiency, which is something I'm sure we'll talk a lot about in depth. And then the third one was talking about how these wide receivers either make their quarterbacks look better or worse. So kind of QB adjusting, if you will. So let's dive right into the first piece. And I just kind of wanted to talk about the stickiness of efficiency stats. A lot of us, you know, around the industry have looked at this, and certainly we've seen that volume tends to be more sticky than efficiency. But first of all, let's just start off with efficiency stats themselves. Are there certain efficiency stats that are more sticky than others? And if so, why?
Yeah, that would definitely be yards per route run or fantasy points per route run. So just going to throw some numbers out there. Yards per route run had a 0.50 correlation to PPR fantasy points the following season. Raw targets was 0.54, so not much differentiating there. Predicting targets the following season, it was 0.58 to 0.51. In terms of stickiness, it was 0.58 to 0.46. And this was the best efficiency stat I looked at. I looked at a few, but yeah, the big difference there was looking at things on a per route rather than per target basis. And because of that, you know, Adam Harstead of Football Guys has been ranting about this for a few years now, but targets are themselves a positive indicator of talent. When you look at why is a quarterback throwing a receiver the ball, it's because they're open, they're good, they have some sort of rapport, what have you. But typically targets are a good thing. And what you're doing is with yards per target, you're dividing one good thing by another good thing. Yards, targets. But yards per route run is different in that it kind of incorporates targets into the equation. And I think that's why it came out better in the end.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that's right on the money. And something I kind of do sometimes, especially for tight ends, is I'll divide the number of routes run into the number of snaps, just try to get a feel for how often they're used in the passing game. Is that something, I know it's a little off script, but is that something you've looked at too, to just kind of get a feel for which guys are actually used in the passing game a little bit more?
Yeah, exactly. I'm always looking at percent of pass blocking snaps. Like Kobe Fleener, for instance, last year, it's so frustrating he didn't do more. He was only used on 2.4% of the team's pass blocking snaps. The rest of the time he was running routes. So yeah, that's something I pay attention to. And then in DFS, I'll kind of look at that. I'll see if they're up against a really stout front seven or what have you, and if possibly they're going to be using that tight end as a blocker more often than they otherwise would have.
Right on. Well, as Doc mentioned, you looked at the stickiness of several stats, and like many in the industry, like we've already talked about, volume stats are generally more sticky than efficiency stats. And you mentioned the routes run numbers, and I think Danny over at Intentional Rounding, we had him on a couple weeks back, he found the same thing. So that's totally unsurprising to me that routes run is a very sticky efficiency stat. But you took it a step further, and you looked at the top and bottom 20 wide receivers in each of those categories. Would you like to talk about some of the guys that really stood out to you in both the high and the low?
Yeah, so you know, for 2 years there's been this efficiency versus volume debate, and I've been trying to articulate my thoughts, and I finally got it, but it's embarrassing it took me that long. It's just that if you look at my sample, so my sample was 10 years, all wide receivers with at least 50 targets. And the middle bulk of that efficiency sample, you know, efficiency is fairly irrelevant, but it's surprisingly predictive at the polar extremes. I did just top 20 and bottom 20 by each year. You could do like a percent, whatever. But yeah, top 20 wide receivers in yards per route run, for instance, see a 10% drop off in targets the following season. Bottom 20, there's a drop off of 35%, and then the average is 20%. So really, if a wide receiver is in the top 20 yards per route run, you could kind of expect them to possibly see an increase in targets. So by what statistic would you like me to look for? Maybe a few guys who are highly efficient.
I think Definitely yards per route run. I mean, that's a PFF stat. It's one of your guys' signature metrics and something you're able to work with. I'm super jelly of it. And so, yeah, what guys did you find on yards per route run?
Yeah, so Julio Jones is just the yards per route run king. Over the last four seasons, he's ranked first, fifth, first, and first in yards per route run. Surprisingly, Antonio Brown did not make the top 20. Oh, no, he was number seven. Odell Beckham Jr. was number six. Mike Evans was number five. Tyreek Hill really surprised me. He did not run very many routes at all, but he was hyper efficient, ranking fourth in yards per route run. AJ Green was number two. T.Y. Hilton was number three. Two guys, Adam Thielen and Michael Thomas, were the only two wide receivers to rank top 20 in yards per target, wide receiver rating, which is passer rating when you're throwing the ball, yards per route run, and drop rate. Doug Baldwin was very close. He finished 21st in yards per route run, but he would have been the third wide receiver to join that.
I thought it was interesting that you stratified this by the top 20 and then the bottom 20 and then everybody else in the middle, because that's kind of tagged along to something I've seen over the years where certain wide receivers just tend to be above average in efficiency or near the top of the crop in efficiency year after year after year. You pointed out some similar guys, Julio Jones, Doug Baldwin. I've also noticed, at least in yards per target over expectation, not depth adjusting, but AJ Green in every year but one of my sample size has been over. So just a lot of these big names. But one of the other things I notice about all these big names is they tend to have a lot of stability. Same quarterback, same use in the passing game year over year over year. I think obviously part of it's talent and part of it's that stability. Contrast that with somebody like Dez Bryant, who's been kind of up and down in efficiency the past three or four years. Different quarterbacks. You had that Tony Romo year, then you had that year where there were no good quarterbacks at all on the Cowboys when Romo was injured, and then they got Dak back last year. So I think, part of the, at least in my philosophy, is part of the stickiness comes from talent, and part of it just comes from situational. Is that kind of what you find as well? And if so, what are your thoughts around Allen Robinson? Because, I mean, he wasn't very good last year in terms of efficiency, and it looks like he still has a pretty stable situation there.
So I found something similar where sometimes it is just a player who's hyper efficient. Like we were just talking about Doug Baldwin, doesn't see a tremendous amount of targets, but has been incredibly efficient the past few seasons by a number of different metrics. And then you'll see guys like the New Orleans Saints, right? By depth adjusted yards per target, Michael Thomas ranked fourth, Brandon Cooks ranked 10th, Willie Snead ranked eight. So, I mean, is it those guys or is it just the offense and Drew Brees? But yeah, Allen Robinson is a guy, and I think I'm going to butt heads with Nick here, but he's a guy I've been off of for a number of different reasons. He ranked dead last in depth adjusted yards per target. He ranked last or near dead last in a number of other efficiency metrics. And there's just other reasons on top of that to be kind of skeptical. The team drafted a running back in the first five picks. They're probably going to go more run heavy. No wide receiver scored a higher percentage of his fantasy points when the team was trailing by seven or more points over the past three seasons. And if their defense does improve as ADP and everyone else suspects that it will, that's less garbage time for him. He struggled drastically against elite cornerbacks. This is going to be my next series. And the far bulk of his productions come against really the league's worst quarterbacks.
So I'm actually with you on Allen Robinson. My point was the fact that he was so bad last year and his situation is stable. I think he's going to have a stable situation again this year. I'm going to throw it over to Josh here real quick. I think he wanted to ask you about Tyreek Hill.
Well, yeah, and I'll throw in with Allen Robinson too. I mean, I actually I did my air yards model. I haven't gotten to him yet, but he's coming up. He's actually at the tail end of wide receiver two for me. So he's like right at wide receiver 24. Where do you have him ranked right now in terms of wide receiver, Scott?
I think I had him at number 54 overall, and I got some heat for that. I'm not sure where exactly among wide receivers. I'd have to pull it up. But I know, probably closer to you, not too far off.
Yeah, I think we're probably both pretty close there. And one thing I noticed when I looked at his stats, in terms of volume, almost exactly the same year over year, 14 to 15. What dropped off was his TD rate, and then he didn't catch a pass. I think he got one pass over 20 yards last year. I think it was a perfect storm of bad efficiency. So I think there is a chance he'll improve his efficiency, and that if you average his career, you're going to see, you know, a reasonable uptick. But no, I think you're right to peg him as just probably not as good as we hoped he would be after 2015. But speaking of a guy who we maybe don't have a clear picture on again, Tyreek Hill, he came in as one of the best yards per route run guys in terms of efficiency. He's going, I think, in the fourth round now. He's certainly his ADP is not cheap. Do you think he's undervalued? I mean, because he is, in terms of yards per route run, you know, in the top five. Do you think he's undervalued currently?
I actually have him right behind Allen Robinson. It looks like 26, 27. But yeah, so what's interesting about him is that in my articles, this was before the Chiefs got rid of Jeremy Maclin. I was saying, you know, he was so insanely efficient in every category. We know he's going to fall back down to earth in terms of efficiency. His efficiency is unsustainable. But we also know he'll see an increase in targets because he was so good. And the Chiefs cutting Maclin really just kind of solidified that case. And I could see him seeing a large workload. Again, the Chiefs offense isn't really one I ever want to get too excited about for pass catchers.
Right.
But I'm not going to fault anyone for taking him that high. I wouldn't, but wouldn't be a terrible pick.
Good stuff there. I want to move on to the next article, which is the depth-adjusted efficiency. This is obviously something I'm pretty passionate about because you and I both happen to be working on this at the same time without knowing each other was, and I think it's cool. We actually both called it the exact same metric, depth-adjusted yards per target over expectations. So it looks like we're right in line here together based off the work I've seen you do. First, I just wanted you to kind of talk about the methodology you used here. Just walk me through how you did this, how you adjusted for the depth of target, and then maybe what you found about this statistic's predictability relative to some other statistics.
Yeah, so I have a 10-year sample of play-by-play data to go off of. I looked at every target over that span. I adjusted by depth of target and position. I've also tried to do this to include distance from end zone. I've also adjusted it for quarterback play, but didn't love it. But then you run into those extra, when you add those extra variables, it kind of makes things difficult because it shrinks your sample size. Like there's not too many examples of a running back seeing a target thrown 19 yards from their own 48-yard line. But yeah, I like it. It's not going to sniff yards per route run in terms of predictability. But again, like this is a different statistic. This teaches us something else. It answers a different question. At the very least, it's better and more predictive of targets the following season than just regular yards per target.
Yeah, so let's dive into this. You know, just talk about which players you had that were the most efficient in terms of depth adjusted efficiency, and any ones that really stood out to you that you might be kind of high on for 2017 as well.
Chris Ogden came in at number one. Not too high on him, but I do think Brandon Cooks comes in and takes that deep ball roll away from him. And I think he ranked top 10, so I think he's going to be fairly efficient in New England. Adam Thielen came at number two. He was a guy who just dominated by every single one of these efficiency metrics. But my concern with him is he also had the easiest cornerback schedule, and the far bulk of his production came in just one game against Green Bay, which is the worst secondary in football. Julio Jones came in at number three, no surprise there. Julio Jones is a beast. Michael Thomas, number four. Jarvis Landry was a big surprise for me, just because everyone's viewing his last season as a big disappointment. He saw a significant drop-off in targets with the Dolphins opting to go more run-heavy, but he actually was super efficient on a per-target basis, the most efficient season of his career. Tyler Lockett sneaking in at number 14 was kind of encouraging because I didn't think I'd find too many arguments to support drafting him highly, but I am a big fan. Yeah, and Amari Cooper was another guy who ranked lowly here, I think, two seasons ago, where Crabtree ranked highly. This year they switched.
Interesting.
What about you?
Yeah, I mean, number one and number two at wide receiver were Hogan and Thielen for me as well. I used a little bit different methodology than yours. What I found was that there's a little more narrow of a spread at the shorter depths, and then there's much more of a wide spread at the longer depths. So I, what I did is I basically took the standard deviation at each of the depths and then figured out on a standard deviation basis which wide receivers were the best or worst. So it's slightly different, but I think we both got very similar results. Third was Taylor Gabriel for me, and then fourth was Julio Jones. So of our top four, three were the exact same. My model also,
I don't think Taylor Gabriel met my minimum requirements.
Yeah. He was 51 targets. I decided a 50-target cutoff, but I think, you know, we're pretty in line.
I think PFF has him at like 48 targets.
Okay, yeah, there you go. So for me, Jarvis Landry, he was right up there as well. Not fifth, but you know, inside the top 12 wide receivers. And if we, again, do a standard deviation basis adjustment, I found him as a 90th percentile wide receiver for his depth. You know, and you compare him to Tavon Austin, who was basically the same depth, and then Tavon Austin was around a 10th percentile, even worse actually, like a bottom 5 percentile wide receiver for his depth. And you know, Tavon Austin 6.9 ADOT, at least by the numbers we use, and then Jarvis Landry was 6.5. I'm sure you probably have slightly different because we use different data sources, but I think, you know, we get kind of the same idea there. So one of the other things that I used all the other positions and found just the Atlanta, just in general, was just crushing it. Devontae Freeman for running backs was number one. So, you know, I kind of do worry a little bit for Matt Ryan in terms of his efficiency falling off, because he had his most efficient year ever by far. So just in terms of efficiency, I wonder if these numbers will come down a little bit for Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up a statistic right now. I have it on my laptop, but yeah. Kyle Shanahan, I'm like his biggest advocate, so that's a big red flag for me. And then Matt Ryan just coming off of easily his most efficient season, and not just that, but it's like a top three quarterback season of all time, has me, you know, completely off of him. And most of that offense, to be quite honest, outside of me.
What about the bottom of the barrel there? What guys did you find in terms of depth adjusted efficiency that were poor, and maybe did any of these names even surprise you?
Yeah. So like I said, I had Allen Robinson ranking last. Right behind him, Seth Roberts, no surprise. He was terrible. Dante Moncrief, third worst. That was kind of a surprise, but not really. He's a huge touchdown guy. He's the fifth highest touchdown percentage among all wide receivers with at least 200 targets since he entered the league. And he ranks, I think, bottom 10 in yards per route run and yards per target over that span as well. Brandon Marshall, Corey Coleman's another guy I've been consistently bashing. Such a large percentage of his production has come on just three targets against two of PFF's worst cornerbacks. Nelson Aguilar, Tavon Austin, Dorial Green-Beckham, Tajay Sharpe, Devin Funchess, Albert Wilson, Jermaine Kearse, Jeremy Curley. So a bunch of terrible guys. And then at the end, DeAndre Hopkins and Mike Evans sneak their way in there. for Hopkins, I think it was just, you know, the quarterback play was so bad. We're not quarterback adjusting this just yet. And then the other one was Mike Evans, who I know, Josh, I know air yards is a little different, but for PFF, we have Mike Evans like pacing the league in yards in the air per game. We had him at 168.1, and the next closest was Julio Jones at only 129.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, he just got targeted deep so much, so often, just insane. And you know, he does do that thing where he catches the ball and falls down. And I know you've pointed that out. I don't know if it has anything to do with, you know, him not getting led very well. You know, there is a quarterback component to Yak. I don't think it's a huge part of it, but there is something there, right? You put it on time and on target and you hit him in stride, the guy's going to be able to get more Yak. But I also think his game is more, I'm big, I'm strong, I'm going to push a guy down, I'm going to get downfield with kind of like in a Dez Bryant fashion. What's your take on his yak? Do you think it's something he can improve on, Do you think that Jameis getting better third year in the league, that he can help him in that regard? Or do you think that we're stuck with a guy who's going to, you know, get a 15-yard pass, jump up, grab it, and fall down?
So I think with Evans, and the yards after the catch per reception is, like, not just bad, it's kind of, like, historically crazy. Let me just pull this. So over the last 10 seasons, there's been 203 1,000-yard seasons by a wide receiver. Mike Evans, 2016, ranks last in yards after the catch per reception of those 203 seasons. All three of his seasons rank in the bottom 20 of those 203. Like, that's crazy. So, and that's a three-year sample. So maybe he's just this guy who just sucks after the catch. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, though. If you look at the weapons surrounding him in Tampa Bay, there's been no one else, and he's been the focal point of that offense. With seeing bracket coverage, everyone knows the ball's going to go to him. So hopefully, you know, this upgrade in tight end with O.J. Howard and DeSean Jackson, who's been hyper efficient by yards per target, one of the best, and depth adjusted yards per target as well. Hopefully, that means probably a decline in volume, a decline in that massive air yard numbers, but an increase in efficiency.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I think he is not going to see as much volume. And I'm hopeful that he'll be able to pick up some more yards on the ground after the catch. Hey, I wanted to circle back on Landry because a guy who we both really respect, Evan Silva, is really down on him this year just because he thinks he's not going to get the volume. And that might be the case. I don't know that I'm completely buying the narrative that Coughlin is somehow, as executive vice president, somehow pulling strings and going to make him call more run plays. I think they want to be more effective running. I don't know that they're necessarily going to run more, especially if they're behind again. But you pointed out something I've seen as well, which is that Landry's efficient. So if they are good at running the ball, that typically helps the passing game. Are you as down on Landry as some other folks are out there?
So I'm not really sure. I'm kind of more down on Parker, which, like, I just don't trust it. I don't trust all the off all this hype that we're hearing. I think he's going to lead the team in targets probably. And, you know, how efficient he was last season kind of makes me think he's the more dependable one. But yeah, Miami threw the ball 18.9% less than in 2015. They're supposedly going to run the ball even more this year. I'm not really sure what to make of him, but, I'm not knocking him down too many spots. It's just too large of a sample of production.
All right, let's real quick. We got just maybe a couple more minutes here, but I wanted to move on to your final piece about quarterback adjusting these. So you kind of went through and looked at each quarterback, you know, how each receiver got targets from their quarterbacks. And then you did an average. I think it might be a weighted average of the targets they got from their respective quarterbacks. Like, for example, for players that have multiple quarterbacks throwing them on the same team that year. But in other words, so you looked at quarterback rating. So what was the expected quarterback rating of a wide receiver's targets? And then what was the actual quarterback rating for the targets they received? That's kind of how you did the methodology. So I just wanted to real quick just dive into names. What names really stood out to you in this method, and did it open your eyes to anybody?
Yeah, so that'd be Kenny Britt for sure. He had a wide receiver rating of 96.2 and an expected wide receiver rating of 76.2. We know Los Angeles was a dumpster fire last year, but he really, really rose above it. Was our second most efficient wide receiver behind Andrew Hawkins. Doug Baldwin was another guy. He is top three in the league each of the past two seasons in just regular wide receiver rating. But adjusting it for Russell Wilson led him to come out to be top three. Like, Russell Wilson was really inefficient last season compared to his typical career. In his first four seasons in the NFL, he ranked first, ninth, fifth, and fourth in PFF passer rating. Last season, amongst injuries, he ranked 15th. So it's just kind of encouraging to see Baldwin so efficient despite Russell Wilson not being so efficient. And then hopefully, as his health returns, you know, maybe Baldwin could be even better next year. We'll see.
Yeah.
And then Adam Thielen, yep.
I was just going to jump in there on Russell Wilson. I think a lot of it had to do with Jermaine Kearse. Kearse, I actually found 2 years ago, you know, when Russell Wilson had that insane season, was above average in efficiency, and then the prior year to that as well. And then this past year, Kearse was just like one of the worst, as you mentioned earlier. So I think part of Russell Wilson's efficiency had to do with Kearse. I think there were some other things going on there as well, but 100% with you, Doug Baldwin. And I also want to talk about Kenny Britt real quick, because when I failed to neglect this in the depth adjusted part, but I found that Kenny Britt was 28th in standard deviation adjusted, depth adjusted, whatever, among wide receivers. And that, of course, also was with his pretty, you know, average to below average quarterback play. If you look at, of course, Kessler, he was a lot better than the other quarterbacks they had on that roster that year. But by and large, below average quarterback play, 28th best in depth adjusted. He's going right now as a wide receiver 51 in PPR. Round the back half of the 10th round. Is he a guy you're just like targeting all the time? Because I know I am.
Yeah, I love Britt.
Go ahead with what you're going to say about Thielen, I think it was.
The last person I'll mention as far as positives go was Odell Beckham Jr., who came in at number 7. Last season he played alongside rookie Sterling Shepard, who was fairly inefficient by a number of different metrics I went over. Also, PFF's 18th worst rated wide receiver in Victor Cruz, and PFF's worst rated tight end in Bill Ty. As a team, Giants running backs ranked 5th worst in yards per carry. So basically, Odell Beckham Jr. was the only offensive player opposing teams ever needed to worry about. And still, he rose far above expectation. Typically, by this metric, which honestly, the correlation to targets and stuff like that, not as good as the other metrics, but typically a star wide receiver has a lower wide receiver rating just because they're peppered with the ball so much. Defenses put more pressure on them. But that wasn't the case with Beckham. Like, honestly, you probably should have targeted him even more. Last season, Manning averaged a 105.3 passer rating when targeting Beckham. When targeting all other Giants receivers, he averaged a passer rating of 78.9. For reference, Blake Bortles averaged a passer rating of 78.8.
That is brutal. Do you think that Eli's struggles last season and maybe a little bit the season prior have to do with the receiving core then? I mean, because he's typically and historically been able to support wide receiver one. It hasn't always just been, you know, the fact that he's had backup on the team. Do you think with Ingram added to the fold now, they got more weapons? Do you think that Eli can continue to be productive for another couple years?
I was just asked this question by my roommate, actually. I kind of had a similar cop-out. Brandon Marshall's definitely going to help. I think Victor Cruz might have been, like, behind Aguilar and Tavon Austin as possibly the worst wide receiver to see that many snaps last season. And also, offensive line, like, you're only as good as your worst offensive lineman. That's the saying, at least. And Eric Flowers is probably the worst left tackle in the league. So that didn't help either. Eli Manning's not someone I'm going out of my way to target, but I do think he's better off this season than he was this season ago.
Good stuff. Well, I think we got run out of time there, but you know, one kind of final thing I wanted to say: if you find a wide receiver who's really good in all of these different metrics, whether it's your yards per route run or QB adjusted or depth adjusted, all these different things, you know, some of the names that we've talked about stand out, like Doug Baldwin, Kenny Britt, etc., Julio. You know they're a good wide receiver. We can probably expect good things to come from them. Great stuff there, Scott. Really appreciate your time. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of plug before we let you go?
Just one more stat about Eli Manning that I wanted to mention was, so 2 seasons ago, he ranked 1st in deep ball accuracy or deep ball passer rating. And last season, he ranked 3rd worst. So maybe Ingram, who was the led all tight ends in deep receptions last season, maybe he helps with that efficiency, that balances that out a bit. But the only thing to plug, I guess, is Thursday I'm going to be doing a Facebook Live show for PFF, and I'll be doing that every Thursday. If you want to check in, I think just follow the PFF account on Facebook.
Yeah, and I just want to plug PFF in general. They just released kind of upgraded their kind of subscription, just the way they're doing things, bringing back their signature stats for a certain amount of money per year. I think they've taken just an awesome revamped approach to allowing folks who are just really interested in football to get in there and get their hands on the same kind of information that teams are seeing. So I'm really stoked on that. And I just got the email the other day that you were going to be holding a little chat on there. So you have access to Scott as well. Pretty cool stuff. If you are into football, definitely check out PFF's Elite Stats.
Great stuff there. Appreciate it, Scott. Once again, that was Scott Barrett. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at ScottBarrettDFB, senior fantasy football analyst at Pro Football Focus. That's going to do it for this edition of The Numbers Game. I'm Nick Giffen. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at RotoDoc. And as always, my co-host Josh Hermsmeyer on Twitter at FriscoJosh. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to The Numbers Game, a sports analytics podcast powered by RotoViz Radio. Please review the podcast in iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, numbersgamepod@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @numbersgamepod. Our theme music is provided by Black Ant. And remember, you can always support the podcast by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the Football Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.